Well, hi, friends. This recording might sound a little bit different to you. There were some technical difficulties in recording the sermon on the Sunday morning, and I was asked to do a new recording, and so I'm just recording it from my office here. So if this sounds a little bit different to you, it is. But there were some things that lined up this week, maybe in my own life and hearing from others, that made it seem like it would probably be a good thing to record this message, because I think God has something for some people who might listen to it. And so bear with me. This is a little bit different, but I trust that it will be of help to you, and that God will work even in a context like this. It's a little bit different. Let me remind you of where we've been if you've been tracking with us. We've been working our way week by week, chapter by chapter, through the book of 1 Samuel. And last Sunday, we covered 1 Samuel 8, which is where the people ask the prophet Samuel to give them a king. They no longer want Samuel just ruling them, leading them as a prophet. And in saying that, what they are actually saying is they don't want God's leadership in the same way. They want to be like all of the nations around them and have a king over them who would lead them, fight their battles. It's a way of really them getting what they want. And so they ask Samuel to give them a king, and Samuel doesn't like it, but he goes back to the Lord in prayer and says, "This is what they've said." And God says, "Well, give them what they want, give them a king." And he says, "Give them some warnings." So Samuel goes back to them, gives them some warnings. You can read that in chapter 8. And then he goes back to the Lord in prayer again and says, "I gave them the warnings, but they still want a king." And so God says once again to Samuel, "Give them a king." So Samuel's now heard it twice. And one of the things that we unpacked last week is that when you hear something in prayer, you want to make sure you're getting clear direction, and you want to make sure you hear it more than once, probably. I quoted a guy named John Wimber who used to say that big decisions needs big directions. Bad grammar on purpose makes it memorable. Big decisions needs big directions. You don't want to go making big life decisions or decisions that are going to change a country on the basis of one thing you think you might have felt, heard, sensed in prayer. You got to get more than that. So Samuel hears it twice from the Lord, but Samuel has enough discernment and experience with the Lord to wait for more from the Lord before he just goes and selects his own king for them. And so that's what we're going to get into in 1 Samuel chapter 9. We're going to see that the Lord selects a king in the process. I made the point, this is a point that we do need to remember. As we read these scriptures of stories where God relates to people and we see God's activity in the lives of people, we need to remind ourselves that these are examples of ways that God is often at work, can be at work. So I will frequently be using the word sometimes. Sometimes God acts this way. Sometimes God says or does this. And you're going to have to do the hard work of processing with the Lord. Am I in my life, am I in one of those sometimes times? Am I experiencing that right now? Because it won't automatically be the case, but sometimes it will. Let me tell you a story. Years ago, when I was in school studying, I used to love, I still love books, but I used to love books and buying books and putting them on my shelf, and it made me feel smart and intelligent and all of this, right, idolatrous and stupid stuff. But anyway, I used to love buying books, and I get more than I needed sometimes, but they looked great on my shelf, and I just loved books. And I was buying books for my courses at my school. And at the school bookstore, they had this thing where if you bought so many books, spent so much money there, they actually gave you free books on top of that. And they had this stack of free books. And so I had bought so many textbooks and spent so much money there for the things that I needed that they gave me a free book that I didn't need and I didn't actually want, but I still put it on my shelf because, you know, it's just filling up the space and it looks good. It makes me feel good and, you know, silly stuff like that. I had no intention of reading this book. I would never have bought it on purpose. And years later, when my life was breaking down spiritually, it was the book that I got for free that God used to change my life and meet me in such profound ways that it changed the course of my life. I wouldn't be here today. I would not be a pastor today had God not used a book I'd gotten for free that I didn't even want when suddenly I needed those words and that direction. And sometimes God uses things that, you know, he lines things up and he puts things in our path or brings things out of our past maybe that we weren't even expecting. But it's there when we need it, and it shows us his purpose. And he meets us in those ways. And we're going to see something that's a much greater example of that in 1 Samuel 9. I'm going to read the whole passage to us now. I'm going to be reading from the NIV. And if you've got a Bible in front of you, you should probably pause, find it, get your NIV out. If you're going online, go to BibleGateway.com and select NIV in 1 Samuel chapter 9. I'm going to read the whole thing. So let's go. 1 Samuel 9, verse 1. There was a Benjamite, a man of standing, whose name was Kish, son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Bechorath, the son of Aphia, the son of Benjamin, or of the tribe of Benjamin. Kish had a son named Saul, as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel, and he was a head taller than anyone else. Now the donkeys belonging to Saul's father Kish were lost. This is a big deal. These are working animals. They run a farm. It's like their tractor. All right, their tractor went missing, as one commentator I read this week said. Basically, their tractor went missing, and they need these things to come back to keep working. So the donkeys were lost, and Saul said to Kish said to his son Saul, take one of the servants with you and go and look for the donkeys. So he, Saul, passed through the hill country of Ephraim and through the area around Cilicia, and they could not find them. They went on into the district of Shalim, but the donkeys were not there. Then they passed through the territory of Benjamin, but they did not find them. When they reached the district of Zuph, Saul said to the servant, so this is like 3 days later, Saul said to the servant who was with him, come, let's go back, or my father will stop thinking about the donkeys and start worrying about us. But the servant replied, look, in this town, there's a man of God. That's another term for a prophet. He's referring to the prophet Samuel. Look, in this town, there's a man of God, and he is highly respected, and everything he says comes true. Let's go there now. Perhaps he will tell us what way to take. Saul said to his servant, if we go, what can we give the man? The food in our sacks is gone. We have no gift to take the man of God. What do we have? The servant answered him again, look, I have a quarter of a shekel of silver. I'll give it to the man of God so that he will tell us the way that we should take. Now there's a little note in brackets here. Formerly in Israel, if someone went to inquire of God, they would say, come, let's go see the seer. Let's go to the seer. Because the prophet of today used to be called a seer, and that will be important in the upcoming verses. Prophets are also seers. Good, Saul said to his servant, come, let's go. So they set out for the town where the man of God was. As they were going up the hill to the town, they met some young women coming out to draw water, and they asked them, is the seer here? Is Samuel around? He is, they answered. He's ahead of you. Hurry now. He has just come to our town today, for the people have a sacrifice at the high place. As soon as you enter the town, you will find him before he goes up to the high place to eat. The people will not begin eating until he comes, because he must bless the sacrifice. Afterwards, those who are invited will eat. Go up now. You should find him about this time. So they, Saul and his servant, went up to the town, and as they were entering it, there was Samuel coming toward them on his way up to the high place. Now we're going to go back in time. Now, the day before Saul came, the Lord had revealed this to Samuel. Now, God is speaking here, verse 16. About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. Anoint him ruler over my people Israel. He will deliver them from the hand of the Philistines, who are their enemies. I have looked on my people, for their cry has reached me, God says. Now, back into present time. When Samuel caught sight of Saul, the Lord said to him, "This is the man I spoke to you about yesterday. He will govern my people." Saul approached Samuel in the gateway and asked, "Would you please tell me where the seer's house is?" "I am the seer," Samuel replied. "Go up ahead of me to the high place, for today you are to eat with me. You're going to join me for dinner. And in the morning, I will send you on your way and will tell you all that is in your heart. As for the donkeys that you lost 3 days ago, don't worry about them. They have been found. And to whom is all the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and your whole family line?" Remember, Israel had asked for a king. That's what Samuel's referring to. But Saul doesn't understand that. Verse 21, Saul answered, "But am I not a Benjamite from the smallest tribe of Israel? And is not my clan, my people, the least of all the clans of the tribe of Benjamin? Why do you say such a thing to me?" Samuel doesn't answer. Then Samuel brought Saul and his servant into the hall and seated them at the head of those who were invited, about 30 in number around the table. Samuel said to the cook, "Bring me the piece of meat I gave you, the one I told you to put to the side." So the cook took up the thigh with what was on it and set it in front of Saul. Remember, meat is a treat, and so this is quite an honor to be given the best piece of meat when most people didn't have meat on a day-in and day-out basis. Samuel said to him, "Here is what has been kept for you. Eat it, because it was set aside for you for this occasion from the time that I said, I have invited guests." From the time that Samuel planned this gathering, he had planned for Saul to be there and to have this. And Saul dined with Samuel that day. Verse 25, after they came down from the high place to the town, Samuel talked with Saul on the roof of his house. Roofs were where people had their guest rooms. You got to think of a house being a cube. It's got a flat roof, and they would put temporary shelters up on the roof of their house when they had guests. So that's what's going on here. So they talked through the night, then they arose about daybreak, and Samuel called to Saul on the roof, "Get ready, I will send you on your way." When Saul got ready, he and Samuel went outside together. As they were going to the edge of the town, Samuel said to Saul, "Tell the servant to go on ahead of us." And the servant did so. "But you, Saul, stay here for a while so that I may give you a message from God." So whatever they talked about last night on the roof, it wasn't the message yet for Saul to hear, "You're about to become king." That happens right after this in chapter 10. But we are going to pause the reading right here. This is the word of the Lord. And we're going to give thanks for even this particular reading, even if it's in the middle of a story. And that's actually going to be really important for what we come to next. So let's get into this. How did God send Saul to Samuel? This is a fascinating thing to look at. God says explicitly in verse 16, "About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin." How did he send him? Well, 3 days before, some donkeys went missing. And a father says to his son, "Take a servant and go look for them." And Saul and his servant then wander for 3 days. And they wander until they come to a place where a prophet of God just happens to have arrived. And while they are wandering And Saul's wondering what we should do as they're coming near that place. Saul says, we should go back home. And the servant just happens to think about the fact that there's going to be a prophet around here, and they could go ask the prophet. And then they get there. Samuel has just arrived, and they happen to find some women who can direct them to where to find him. And through their directions, Saul just happens to run directly into Samuel. This is the way God works sometimes, friends. It's not hard for God to line up all of these things and to work with people who have free will and have made their own choices along the way, and yet somehow have given direction, and he's given influence. He's influenced in such a way that they have got to where he wanted them to get to at the exact time that they needed to be there. Let me tell you a story about how this happened recently and it is impacting our congregation. As you may remember, if you've been tracking with us for a while, back in the winter time, I gave a confession to the church about how I had gone wrong in the way that I handled COVID and really followed everything the world was doing with regards to COVID, responding to COVID. And I gave that confession. And I mentioned in that confession that I'd had this experience of actually God lining things up like he lined things up in this passage in such a way that I met a guy named Gary, who's a medical doctor who had refused to get the vaccine because abortion was implicated. I think I might have, when I reported this the first time, I might have said in. I didn't mean in. I'm not claiming there was aborted fetal tissue in the vaccine, but it was implicated in the development. And I'd learned that from him, and that he, being a strong Christian, was not able in a good conscience to take the vaccine, partly because of that. And that had been really helpful in me, that conversation, meeting him the first time, had been really helpful in a number of ways for me, coming to some new conclusions and realizing I need to repent of a whole bunch of different ways that I had navigated COVID, including repenting and renouncing taking the vaccine and the effects on me. But now fast forward a number of months, met him, offered the confession. Months later, I'm having a conversation with Joel in our office one day. As you might know, Joel and I, up until very recently, shared offices in the same building, had offices in the same building. So we would often talk about what God was doing and church stuff and all that. And one morning I went into his office just to say good morning. And one of the things he said to me was, hey, maybe we should get together with Gary again. He had joined me for that initial coffee and get together meeting with Gary. And he said, you know, maybe we should get together with Gary again. And I just said to him, I don't really think that's necessary. I don't know if I want to. Like, it's just not, I don't see a point right now. It's not that I don't like Gary. It was a helpful conversation. I enjoyed my time with him. He's a good guy. But I didn't see a point. And so it didn't make it onto my to-do list. That's for sure. And our conversation moved on that morning. Joel and I talked about some other things, and then I went into my office to pray. And my routine was going to be a little different that day because Silas, our younger son, was finishing middle school. And so they had this ceremony they were going to do for him, kind of like a mini graduation for the class who was commencing out of grade 5 and moving up in, or excuse me, leaving elementary school and moving up into middle school. And so we I had arranged that Chantal and I would meet at Silas's school. We'd go see this little ceremony and support our son. And we did that. And so I left the office, went and enjoyed that time, saw Silas. And then when I finished, Chantal said to me, Marcus, our older son, who was in middle school at the time, Marcus is finishing up some exams right now. Could you pick him up and drive him home? Because otherwise it's going to be like a 45-minute walk for him to go home. And the timing worked out really well. So I said, sure, I can go get him. So I just drive up the street and pick up Marcus. And I just have this thought, I should take him out for lunch. But, you know, me being me, my next thought is, where can I find the cheapest lunch in Red Deer? This kid is growing. He eats a lot of food. Like, where can I find the cheapest lunch? I know. I'll take him to that pizza place downtown near my office. It's cheap pizza. It's really good. We'll do that. And I start driving in that direction. And then I realize, oh, Chantel said we're going to be ordering pizza tonight for dinner. Where could I find cheap? Oh, I know. Costco. Costco has the cheapest food I can possibly feed my son. All right, so we're going to Costco and driving to Costco. And on the way to Costco, as we're pulling into Gasoline Alley, which is where Costco is, I have this thought, oh, I need communion supplies for Sunday. And as you might know, the Christian bookstore that has the communion supplies is right across the street from Costco. Their parking lots are opposite one another. And so I think, okay, I'll go to that first. So I pull into Costco parking lot, or excuse me, the Christian bookstore parking lot, and I'm looking at the different communion supplies. They have some new communion supplies. I'm trying to figure out if one's going to taste better than the other. And anyway, it takes me a little while, but I buy them. And then Marcus and I get back in the car and we just drive directly across the street. And because I had done that, as you might know, directly, like because the parking lots are directly opposite one another, there are a variety of entrances, but I took that entrance right across from the Christian bookstore, straight shot across. And it means that you enter the parking lot at a spot that's different from the main entrance. And so I parked on that side of the building. And as you might know, then that means that Costco has three entrances to the building, the entrance, the exit, and then they have those third doors that are sometimes open next to the automotive section. And those doors were open that day. And I used those doors because I had gone into the parking lot from that side because I'd gone to the Christian bookstore first. And I'd gone to the Christian bookstore first because I had this thought that I should do that while on the way to get Costco food. And I had the thought about Costco food because of having the thought about pizza. And then the pizza connecting with, I had the thought of I should take Marcus out for lunch, which lined up with the timing of Silas's thing finishing. And I get to the doors that I wouldn't have otherwise used at Costco with Marcus, and Gary is walking out those doors. Gary, who that morning Joel had just said to me, we should meet with Gary again. And I suddenly realized, he's right. We should. God is in this. And I shook Gary's hand and said, good to see you, Gary. We should have another coffee. Because sometimes God lines things up and there's a reason for it. We need to be open to such things. Now, I'm not baptizing every single coincidence in your life. I think sometimes there are simply coincidences. And then there are other times where God is very clearly in it. So not every wandering donkey is the start of your coronation. But we need to be more aware and willing to admit there are times where God is lining things up. And then maybe asking why. Let's move on to another part of the story. We'll come back to that story in a minute. Sometimes God speaks and it is both clear, as in it is the answer, and yet it's kind of cryptic as we hear it at the same time. Here's what I mean by that. Look at verse 20 in the story here. Chapter 9, verse 20. The prophet Samuel is speaking. Prophets speak on behalf of God, so that's why I'm saying that I take this to be God speaking in some ways. Samuel says at the end of that verse to Saul, "To whom is all the desire of Israel turned, if not to you and your whole family line?" That's perfectly clear to those of us reading the story who know that Saul will be anointed king, who know that Israel has just asked for a king. That's perfectly clear. But to Saul in the middle of this, without necessarily having those things in mind, it's like what Samuel said to him is completely opaque. It's incomprehensible in the moment. But it is clear. Do you see what I mean by sometimes God speaks clearly, and yet it's not something we understand in the moment? And the reason is because we're still in the middle of something. And because the story hasn't moved on yet, it isn't clear what that actually means. If you know your New Testament, think about Peter on the rooftop in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 10, I believe it is. He has this vision, clear vision, and God speaks some clear words to him, and Peter has no idea what it means. He's completely confused because he's in the start, in the middle of a story, and until that story goes through to events that take days, he doesn't understand until a point that he does, and then suddenly it becomes clear. So there are times where God does speak to us, and it is quite clear, but it's not clear to us. And the reason it's not clear to us is because we're still in the middle of something. Because we're in the middle of a process in a story that isn't done yet. That's true for Peter. It's true for Saul. That's actually true for us, myself, Joel, and Unity in terms of that story with Gary. I am still not clear on why God sent us back to Gary a second time. We had a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. But I and Joel did not have any clear revelations, big takeaways that would add up to why we were sent there. I think we're still in the middle of something. Let's transition briefly to talk about something different. It's still on the topic of God speaking. Notice at the end of the story that Samuel tells Saul to go send the servant on ahead so that Samuel can speak with Saul privately. Sometimes God has a message for us that's just for us, and we need to keep it just for us for the time being, just between us for the time being. Psalm 25 says the Lord confides in those who fear him. In other words, God speaks, but it's he's sharing a confidentiality with us. And at least for the time being, it's just to be between me and God, between you and God. It's not yet to be shared. And he will sometimes share a secret with us that will have implications for the bigger circles of people that you're a part of. What God is about to share with Saul has implications for his entire people. But for now, it's still just a step between Saul and God, between Saul and Samuel and God. And you know, this is particularly crucial for leaders, spiritual leaders, because confidentiality, the ability to hold a secret, to hold something in confidence, is required to be in leadership. You can't share everything. And there are times where God will test. So I think this is actually a test of Saul's character. Will Saul be someone who will follow Samuel's orders? So it's a test of obedience. And will he be someone who can hold a secret until it is time for it to come out? Sometimes, and this might be a point that's somewhat in addition to what is in the text here, but sometimes when God shares a secret, it's not only to test us or even just to invite us into a new level of friendship, because friends share things, share secrets. Sometimes it's specifically because he's giving you a prayer agenda. I want you to pray into this. You're not to go doing anything about it yet. You're just to pray into it. That's a side point. Okay, let's circle back and wrap this thing up. Circling back to the main point of God lining things up and leading. If you can see God lining things up and leading you in your life, in similar ways to the story with Gary, in similar ways to the story here with Saul, we need to know that there is purpose in it. Even if we don't yet recognize what that purpose is, but then our responsibility is to trust both that there is a purpose, God doesn't just do this stuff arbitrarily and for the fun of it, but that he has a purpose for us and maybe for the wider circles, for his people. There's purpose in it. So we ought to be seeking God for then what is the purpose? And while we don't yet know the purpose or haven't come to the end of that story in such a way that we can look back and see the purpose, we trust God in the middle. So if you can see his hand in leading you, but you don't yet know why, you can trust God in it. Trust him in the middle of your story when you don't yet see the end. And that's for all of us. And then for those of you who are a part of Unity in particular, let me say that especially goes for the whistle. That especially goes for this story I just shared about Gary. There's something here for us. And it's one more supernatural confirmation. God isn't letting this thing go, and he's putting an exclamation point on it. We have to seek him for his purposes in doing such things among us. Let's pray. Lord, would you make us people with eyes to see where you are at work and with hearts that will respond and give you what you desire, that we may keep in step with your spirit and keep in alignment with your purposes. We trust you. We know that you work for the good of those who love you. And so we love you. We commit ourselves to you, and we commit ourselves to a life of faithfulness and trusting you in the dark. Trusting you when the path from, like, looking back, it's clear, but looking ahead, it's dark, and we don't know what's ahead, but we trust you, Lord. Make us people who are faithful, even in the valley. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You are that kind of shepherd, that Psalm 23 shepherd. And we trust you. We love you. Thank you for your word and your work. Amen.